Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
They trap him here. Throws it blindly and gets it back for a triple. Oh, he hit it again!
Steph Curry going off last night. Kevin Harlan on the call, Turner Sports. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Thanks much for making the show part of your day. We welcome in our Richmond audience, 9:10 a.m., 105.1 FM in the capital of Virginia. Everybody else has been listening all over the DMV on 106.7 for the last hour. We're taking you up to 6:30. If you've got to jump out of the car or leave the radio behind, get us on your phone. The Odyssey app is the best way to take the show with you on the move. Let's talk NBA playoffs. Conference finals ongoing. One game down in both the East and the West. And we are pleased to welcome onto the BetQL guest hotline Odyssey NBA insider Ryan McDonough. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights these sports books don't want you to see. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the app. Visit BetQL.com today. Former NBA exec, our insider, Ryan McDonough, is with us. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it, Ryan. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, gentlemen. It's always good to be on with you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate it, my friend. Let's start in the West last night. I don't think it's going to be this easy, but it was pretty easy last night for Golden State. What'd you see and what'd you make of it?
I agree with your assessment. I don't think it's going to be this easy the rest of the way for the Warriors. I thought Dallas looked tired after playing a hard-fought seven-game series against Phoenix. But kudos to Golden State. They really took Dallas out of what they wanted to do offensively. Luka Doncic looked as uncomfortable as he has, not only in this year's playoffs, but I think in his playoff career, given the historic pace he's been on going back to previous years and previous series against the LA Clippers and through the first two rounds this year. He looked terrific. So I give Golden State a lot of credit. One thing I think Jason Kidd and his staff will have to look at in Dallas, guys, is the aggressive defense they use to stifle Utah in round one and then Phoenix in the second round, especially in game seven. I think Golden State has a counter for that with some of the back cuts and the slips. So I expect Dallas to maybe have a different defensive alignment tomorrow to start game two.
Go into detail on what their plan was and how they executed it against Luka and how sustainable it is. He had more turnovers seven than made field goal six last night.
Yeah, terrific ball pressure on Luka. Andrew Wiggins picked him up, oftentimes full court. And I think that's a smart strategy for Luka. He's a historically good player, especially in half-court settings with his size, strength, and vision. But he's a bigger guy. And I think that's the thing that not a lot of people who have been up close to Luka realize is just how big and thick he is. So I think the book on Luka is to try to wear him down, to try to make him work full court. Dallas has a couple other ball handlers, obviously, and Spencer Dinwiddie and Jalen Brunson, who can serve as pressure releases, but the team kind of comes and goes as Luka goes. So I think if you have the athletes and perimeter talent that a team like Golden State has, we saw how many deflections and blocks the Warriors got last night. They had seven blocks in the game and a number of deflections. So they are long and athletic and active defensively. So I think that'll be the game plan for Steve Kerr and his staff on the Warriors sideline. Throw a bunch of bodies, starting with Andrew Wiggins, at Luka and try to wear him down. Just try to make everything difficult so he can't get as comfortable and in rhythm as he was in the first two rounds against Utah and Phoenix.
NBA insider Ryan McDonough with us here on G&D. Ryan, what you just talking about Luka just kind of got me to thinking here a little bit. I remember growing up, there was, you know, no one way to stop a superstar in his prime, right? Whether it was Jordan or, you know, Magic Bird, whomever. And the schools of thought varied. I remember one hearing you basically let the guy go nuts the first two or three quarters. Let him get off whatever shot you wanted. Let him, you know, be a chucker out there, get his points. And then in the fourth quarter, when none of his teammates are in rhythm and have shot at all pretty much all game, then you start to double him and run at him and things like that. Is that something that we still see in this league, or is it just that's kind of the way of the dodo and it's now more in each individual guy has kind of the game plan against him?
That's a terrific question, and I'm glad you asked it, because I thought the Phoenix Suns did exactly what you were talking about in games one and two here in Arizona. I thought the Suns let Luka, didn't let him score, but they took away the shooters. They took away, you know, the driving kicks when you get two or three on the ball, and he's, you know, the best in the NBA, maybe one of the best in NBA history, up there with LeBron James and a few other guys who, because of their size and strength, can make passes that most guys can't make with the reverses and the cross-court skips to the corner and things. You say, holy cow, I didn't know the player could deliver the ball that way to a shooter on time and on target. Luka is LeBron-like in his ability to do that. So I thought that's what Phoenix did in games one and two. They won pretty easily, and then for some reason, and I know it's easier said than done, but when the series shifted back to Dallas for game three in the last five games of that series, I thought the Suns were too worried about Luka, maybe helped too much on Luka, and then Dallas's shooters got in rhythm, and it was target practice over the last five games of that series. So I think that's what Golden State will continue to do, try to wear down Luka, and it's hard, obviously, when you're talking about an all-time great player, but try to wear him down, and then, but also not give the perimeter guys too much space. I think the advantage Golden State has is they have probably the smartest interior defender in the league, and Draymond, who really anticipates as well as any big I've seen in recent NBA history, and kind of pre-rotates even before the pass is made. He has a great sense for what's coming next. I think that's the advantage Golden State has, and with their size and length, you saw him flying around last night and really disrupting just about everything the Mavs tried to do offensively.
Ryan McDonough, Odyssey Sports, and of course NBA TV with us on Grant and Danny. Let's shift to the Eastern Conference. Game two tonight. Heat are up 1-0. Game is in Miami. Jimmy Butler coming off 41. What was your biggest takeaway from game one? And as we look ahead to game two, Al Horford's back for Boston. What could that mean for helping the Celtics out?
It's huge for the Celtics. If you look at Boston's record with and without Al Horford, when they've been on this fantastic run for the past really 4 or 5 months now since the calendar turned. Keep in mind, guys, this was a Celtics team that started 16-19, and I grew up in New England. I worked for the franchise for over a decade. I don't know if I'd ever remembered a fan base who was as down on a team as the Celtics fans were earlier this year. Boston really flipped their season around. It's a credit to Ime Udoka and the players. They've been the most dominant defensive team in the league in 2022. And Horford's a big part of that. So I think the series will change tonight. But this is something that I don't think is getting enough attention nationally. Boston is playing the best player in the playoffs. Jimmy Butler, when you look at not only watching him play, but you look at every kind of analytical metric, he is dominating the playoffs. He dominated game one. Very few, if any, guys in NBA history have put up 41 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks. You know, I could go on. He did everything. So that's the challenge for Boston. I think they're equipped to do it with their defensive talent, especially now with Horford back in the lineup. But it's going to be a challenge because nobody in the NBA is playing better than Jimmy Butler.
Ryan, simple question, but maybe a complicated answer. So I'm a DC guy. I grew up loving the Bullets, now Wizards. And I'm telling you, if we started in a playoff game, Gabe Vincent and Max Struss, I don't even know how to say it. We'd lose by 77 points and get laughed out of the arena. And when Miami does it, of course it works. My question is very simple. How do they do this?
They're the best in the league at identifying talent and maximizing talent. And I think it starts with the scouting staff knowing exactly what to look for. But also, I think the most underrated element of it, guys, is that continuity and chemistry. If you look at the top guys in the Heat organization on the front office side, Pat Riley, Andy Ellisberg, Adam Simon, Chet Kammer, their group, they've been there for decades, literally 2 or 3 decades each. And then on the coaching side, same with Eric Spoelstra and a lot of the guys on his staff. So they know what kind of player they want. They know what kind of system they run. And somehow, of all 30 teams, they've done the best in terms of getting players to not only get in fantastic shape, but to buy into a role and really maximize what they have. And you're right, they've done it with Vincent. They've done it with Strus. Going back a few years, players who were just available that any team could assign, they did it with Hassan Whiteside and Tyler Johnson, and even maximizing veteran talent like Wayne Ellington when he was there had maybe a career-best season. So it's a credit to them that they continue to get it done. And you're right. I mean, that's something that other teams are concerned about. Once you sign a player outside of Miami system, and San Antonio had this kind of stigma a few years back, but once you sign a player and pay him a lot of money thinking he can replicate it somewhere else, from my experience, rarely does a guy play as well. I mean, the system kind of maximizes the player's potential. So kudos to the entire group down in Miami. They continue to mine these diamonds and then develop them into very productive NBA players.
Real quick, before I move on from that series and game two, what's your confidence that Boston wins and evens it up tonight? It sounded like you were leaning in that direction, or maybe I'm putting words in your mouth.
Yeah, well, I think Horford back and Smart back are big. Neither one of those guys played in game one. I feel better about Boston's chances now. I mean, it was announced this morning that Derek White left the team. I believe his girl is having a child. Congratulations to the Whites. But frankly, guys, I think that might make things easier for Ime Udoka on the sideline, given that White has struggled in the playoffs. And now I think Peyton Pritchard will get a few more minutes. We'll see if he's able to hold up defensively. The Heat attacked him in game one. And then maybe Aaron Nesmith gets a little more run. But I think Boston has a good chance to even the series tonight. I picked the Celtics in seven before the series. Despite how game one went, I'm going to stick with it. I think Boston was a little bit tired coming into game one, just given a hard-fought seven-game series against Giannis that culminated in game seven in Boston, a travel day down to South Beach on Monday, and then game two on Tuesday. So I expect the Celtics to be fresher and healthier tonight with Smart and Horford in the lineup. So it's going to be close, but I'll lean toward Boston slightly on the road.
So, Ryan, awkward here because I'm going to talk about a team that's actually been eliminated already when we're sitting here talking about the conference finals. I still can't get over what happened in Game 7 with the Phoenix Suns. You were obviously the GM of the Suns at one point in time, and I'm just curious, A, what your reaction was, because it was just a complete egg laid as if it was a Wednesday game in November in the seventh game.
Last game of a road trip playoff. Or something.
Yeah, it was unreal. And then also where you're at on the Chris Paul dialogue, which is exhausting and so ridiculous nationally at times, but like I'm a Chris Paul guy, and it kind of gets harder and harder to keep standing up and swinging on his behalf. So give me a couple thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I don't say this lightly, guys. I've been affiliated with the league on the team side or the media side for two decades now. It was one of the most surprising results I've ever seen, one of the most shocking games I've ever seen, just given that I watched every minute of the first six games of the series. The home team dominated every game. I mean, especially Phoenix here in Arizona, games 1, 2, and 5 were Suns blowout wins that weren't particularly close. Dallas handled their business at home. So I put out a tweet that I might need to tag Old Takes Exposed or something now. I said, after the game on Friday, after game six, I said, I think it's pretty clear how this one's going to end. Phoenix is going to, you know, beat Dallas handily in game seven. That obviously did not happen. So it was a complete meltdown by Phoenix. And I understand that Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton are kind of the lightning rods who are getting most of the blame, but nobody showed up. I mean, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, who had fantastic years, nobody showed up. And to Dallas's credit, they came out with an aggressive defense, really, you know, stifled Booker and Paul early. Luka got rolling, and then Spencer Dinwiddie, who you guys know, watching him the first half of the year in D.C., came off the bench just throwing flames. I mean, whatever Dinwiddie threw up went in. I think he had 31 points in 25 minutes. So it was shocking, just given that, you know, over the course of a seven-game series, when it's tied at three, usually the first six games are relatively close. They weren't close. They were blowouts for the home team. So for Game 7 to flip and be that dramatic the other way, I give Dallas a lot of credit, but still, I'm scratching my head. I guess I'd have to go back and watch possession by possession to figure out how far things got so far off the rails so quickly for the Phoenix Suns.
We are in D.C., Ryan, so I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about what the Wizards should do. They're at 10. I think it's an okay spot. They need a point guard. I don't think it's a great point guard draft, but I'd love for you to say what your offseason plan would be for this squad.
You're right. It's not a great point guard draft, and I don't think that's what the Wizards need, is a, you know, 19-year-old rookie point guard or something like that, especially when you have Bradley Beal in his prime and his contract situation lingering. I think we've discussed this a little in the past, but my expectation and the expectation around the league is that Beal opts out of the $36 million player option for next year and then re-signs a long-term deal with the Wizards. However, as you guys know, in the NBA, just because a player is on a long-term contract now does not mean you're going to have the player that length of time. Players, if they're unhappy, can demand trades really at any point, given the current climate of the NBA. So I think with Beal, with Porzingis, now hopefully healthy after the trade, that puts pressure on Tommy Shepherd and his group to bring in a veteran ball handler. I think that's more likely via trade than the draft. So they'll look to add somebody at 10 in the draft, but I expect Washington to be pretty aggressive, especially trying to figure out what to do. They sent out a guy they thought would be the answer last year in Dinwiddie. The fit wasn't great for whatever reason alongside Beal and the rest of the group. I think they need to add a playmaker in this year, either by trading the draft pick or via mid-level exception or some kind of bigger deal to try to upgrade with a healthy Beal, with a healthy Porzingis. They need somebody to get those guys the ball.
Ryan, we appreciate the insight, Ryan. Thank you so much for the time.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Ryan.
Be well. There's Ryan McDonough, our Odyssey NBA insider. Those calls are presented by BetQL. BetQL helps you make better bets. Real proven analytics. Bet smarter. Beat the books. Download the BetQL app. Visit BetQL.com today. Who are you pulling for right now? There are four teams remaining in the NBA playoffs. You get the pick, and you got to watch one of them win it all. Who are you rooting for?
Miami. Which is weird because I despised them so much when LeBron went there, but I just love this organization. They're like kind of the new Spurs, right? Guys that nobody else wanted. Even their best player, Jimmy Butler, Philadelphia said, no thanks. Tobias Harris, please. No thanks. We'll build around somebody else. And there he is leading a team without Kyle Lowry, without really any other second star. Their next best player is probably Tyler Hero. Maybe it's Adebayo, but they just develop and build in a way that's kind of anti what the rest of the league is, which is superstar one, superstar two takes less, and you get a guy that's willing to sacrifice a lot that could be the best player on a bad team to be superstar three, championship serve. This is different now, and I like that a lot.
Warriors for me, weirdly, because obviously they had their run where they were dominant and got old, but I almost feel like this is a slightly different iteration. I like what they've overcome as well in the way of the adversity of Steph Curry was hurt and had to get back.
Thompson's injury.
Thompson multiple times over, missed what felt like full seasons. It was like 3 years in between seeing him be Klay Thompson. Steve Kerr has been in and out of being able to coach this year. They've had Mike Brown on the bench a whole lot. So I'm pulling for the Warriors, and I've always found them fun.
As great as they were,
when they were dominating the NBA, normally if you're the best, I start like hate respecting you, where it's like, I'm so tired of this. This team's too good. It's boring. I don't like it anymore. And that has never happened to me for the Warriors for whatever reason. I actually really, really like them. I find almost everyone on that team likable. Draymond Green pushes the envelope a little bit for me because he can be a jerk at times with some of his cheap shots and little things he does. But even him, he's a unique player whose game I really like. So I'm kind of rooting for the Warriors.
Wouldn't
hate
them at all either. Yeah, it's a good point about their dynasty, right? As they're going through it and beating everybody and should have won all those titles with the Kyrie Irving shot notwithstanding against them, you kind of go, they're still really fun. And I know everybody's kind of copying them as changed basketball and everyone shoots 53s a game now, and maybe that's objectionable to some, kind of the Bob Ryans of the world, but it's still such a fun group. Because at the end of the day, they dominated where their best player is barely 6'2". You know what I mean? That's just different than it's ever been. You've had great point guards before, but nobody could ever do what Steph Curry does and has done. The number of threes he's hit, the way that the court has opened up, and they play without a center so often. You're right. They're always really fun to watch.
Quick birthday shout out to London Fletcher. Came to Washington in 2007, 32 years old. People were hoping, well, maybe they'll get a couple good years out of him. There was actually a fear because they were signing him at the end of his career after a run of missing on free agents, that it was a bad idea, and he ended up making over 120 tackles every year the rest of the way. Was outstanding through 2013, ended up being a second-team All-Pro twice, four-time Pro Bowler. He still, I think, can make the case the best free agent they've ever signed. He is today having a birthday celebration. How old do you think London Fletcher is?
45?
47.
Oh.
Always sneaky older than you think just because he played so long.
He played so long.
He was 38 years old and making 120 tackles and ramming his body into fullbacks 23 times a game.
That's amazing. What a career he had.
I don't get why he gets no attention for the Hall of Fame.
I know why. He never ate grass, never danced before the game, never made a big me speech that had, didn't make any sense, where he just screamed at his teammates. He's basically the same career as Ray Lewis.
It seems very Ray Lewis-y what you're doing right now.
And nothing wrong with Ray Lewis, by the way. He was a great player, too. Two, in addition, they were also great. There's the stat lines are the same. The impact was the same. Probably not the same, but Ray Lewis was great on a couple great defenses. London Fletcher was just really, really good for a really long time. Should be a Hall of Famer.
Speaking of the Ravens, they do some classy things. They really love special teams a lot over there because John Harbaugh was a special teams coach. Mm-hmm. They had a press conference today. They didn't say what it was about. They're like, Steve Bisciotti's going to be there, the owner. GM's going to be there. Head coach is going to be there. And there's some people going, they get a deal done
what
with
is
Lamar
this?
Jackson. Is there any way we don't know about it? Their punter, Sam Cook, is retiring after 16 years with the team. And they just had a big press conference to, like, thank him for his services.
Amazing.
I hope they told the local media what it was so, like, some camera crew doesn't come for, like, 40 minutes and they're like, oh.
Uh-huh.
Congrats, Sam.
I guess we'll get rolling on this.
Can you imagine?
Yes.
In Washington, like, Nick Sundberg, who's done, like, all this stuff for Loads of Love, he's been your long snapper for, you know, a decade. They just kick him to the curb like he was yesterday's trash. The Ravens are having press conferences for their punter after 15 years.
Which one of the, which is different?
Which one's better? One of them's a little different.
Which one's you get rid of your Walter Payton Man of the Year to trade up in the draft and draft a fifth round long snapper.
Don't even bring that up, okay?
You did it, man. I didn't do it.
In fairness, we shouldn't bring it up.
We should bring it up every day.
That they traded up for a long snapper?
Yes.
I don't think we should. I think we should never mention it again.
Every day.
In fact, there was a picture online a couple days ago of this D3 baseball player whose name is Connor Cheeseman. And for all I know,
any relation?
I'm really not sure. But it's a great picture because he's kind of a doughy looking like D3 athlete. I love this guy just by the picture. He's got like glasses on. It's like his bio on his whatever team website it is. It says Connor Cheeseman. And someone's like, I love this kid. And we all do. Like, who doesn't?
Sure, rightfully so.
And I retweeted it and said, I'm going to trade up for this guy. And like someone tweeted at me and they go, are you ever going to let this go? And I responded, no.
Never.
Not even a little bit.
Ever.
Well, you guys really want to go there, don't you?
Always.
Yep.
Every time we get a chance. The Commanders made a chance. A decision. Made a chance? That's not what I wanted to say.
They made a change?
A decision. A decision. We have a ruling, so to speak, on whether or not they're going to have joint practices this year. I'll give you the answer on that.
Okay.
And we know when their first preseason game as well. Plus, they got Jahan Dotson under contract. All coming up on Grant and Danny on The Fan. So we've got a verdict on whether or not there will be joint practices for the Commanders. We were hoping there would be. Also a date on their first preseason game. Want to talk about Jahan Dotson getting his deal in place on his rookie contract. All coming up in just a couple of minutes. But I saw this story. I wanted to pass this along to you. Make sure that you have a file. It's fascinating. Did you see the story about the Yankees releasing one of their minor leaguers?
Yes.
And why they cut this guy?
I did see that. And I at first was taken aback. And then I kind of went, I can't believe that's not more commonplace.
Really?
For minor leaguers. These guys who, you know, who are sleeping in flea bag motels or with host families making like $100 a week and eating peanut butter and jelly and stuff.
So my response was the opposite, which was the stones on this
well,
dude.
Well, I'm not saying I endorse it, but I was like, I'm surprised it's not a little bit more commonplace. Tell people what happened.
Yeah, so for people that don't know, so there's this kid named Jake Sanford who was drafted actually in the third round. It's not like he was a nobody. I mean, he was a prospect who had over 20 bombs last year. He was a third round pick in 2019. He was working his way up in the Yankee system. And he was released by the Yankees after he allegedly stole and sold stuff from his teammates. So he would like go around the clubhouse or whenever he had the opportunity to. I don't know the exact machinations of how he pulled it off, but he would take gloves and bats and legitimate tools of the trade, and then he would just put them online and sell them. And he gets caught inevitably because fans would connect the dots or put something together, or like a player would see that one of their things is for sale. And I guess they track it back to this guy scooping stuff up. And allegedly, I guess I have to say that until he's found to have done it by way of a court of law. But they cut him because he was doing this regularly, apparently. On top of that, there's now this speculation that he was telling fans he was going to sell them things like of his own that are signed and everything. And he wasn't making good on that transaction, even though he was taking money in. Crazy, man.
Obviously, you do it one time, You don't get caught, you get emboldened. And then it got worse and worse and worse is what it sounds like to me, just kind of reading the story.
24 years old.
Yeah.
He is from Dartmouth, Canada. Was, as I said, a third-round pick. They conducted an investigation that lasted several weeks, and then they cut him this past week. And he signed 2 days ago, on Tuesday, in the Frontier League with the Ottawa Titans. And he legit, I mean, we're talking about 20-plus homers in the upper level of the minor leagues. Like, was probably going to the big leagues.
Right. This isn't me. This is like a legit potential big leaguer here.
So I wonder if he gets, I'm assuming he'll get another shot eventually if he, like, tears it up in any league ball.
Yeah, but, I mean, you would think you'd have to go through maybe a little bit more rigmarole or answer a couple uncomfortable questions. But yeah, I don't think his career is over, but it is with the Yankees, certainly.
The only thing I can remember anywhere like this in the news was, and I'm pretty sure this is right, remember the former Redskin Albert Connell?
Yes.
Didn't he get in trouble for stealing something out of his teammate's locker?
I believe so, but I think somebody corrected me when I said that on the show a couple years ago, because I thought that's what it was. I thought it was as simple as somebody's wallet or something out of the locker. So I don't want to put my foot in my mouth and say the wrong thing, but I do remember that being something.
So I'm pulling it up here from the late Len Pascarelli, who, I don't know if you remember Len Pascarelli,
absolutely.
ESPN.com. That was
just
my
a staple.
Writing stories for years. So this is from April 23rd, doesn't say what year, but he was in Washington in 99, mm-hmm. when he went for 1,000 yards, the same year that Westbrook did, as part of my favorite team ever.
Sorry about that offense.
Brad Johnson was just making plays, and then Dan Snyder said, I'd rather have Jeff George than
nope.
this guy. But with restitution made, Jefferson, Louisiana, Parish District Attorney Paul Connick Jr. Paul Connick Jr. sounds like a singer or something. Is that
Harry Connick Jr.
Is he related to Harry Connick?
And then sometimes Harry Connick Jr. does a daytime talk show for some reason. Like, let me just go to the piano.
I think he does that every day.
He still has one?
I think he has a show.
Really? Still on?
Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. You acted like he hosted it twice.
Well, he did. Like, sometimes it would be on. Other times it was not on. I could never really tell. I didn't really follow it.
Probably just based on if someone put it on the TV in the kitchen.
Interesting concept.
Is that what you're basing
The View, the Chat, the Chew, the Harry Connick?
So the charges were dropped. Former New Orleans Saints wide receiver Albert Connell. It was Deuce McAllister who charged him. Alleged to have stolen over $4,363 from teammate Deuce McAllister last season. McAllister informed authorities 2 weeks ago that Connell first suspended and then released by the Saints after the theft charges were made public, repaid him in December. So I guess he did it, but he paid him back. So he dropped the charges.
Oh, there you go.
But that's the only thing. Like, I guess you're right. It is weird that stuff like that doesn't happen more because we think of everyone as good buddies. Like, I've never had anything necessarily stolen right out from under me at work. I leave my wallet on the table or whatever. I just kind of trust the people around us. But I have definitely had stuff taken out of my locker, or I'll leave headphones behind and never see them again.
Mm.
Like, stuff like that definitely happens. I don't know if that's the same as this, but in a locker room where not everyone has relationships with each other or whatever, going in someone's locker feels different.
Yeah, ripping off a bat and eBaying it, or like your gamer glove and being like, "Wait, where's my glove?
I don't know. I haven't seen it. Was it? Why don't you check over there?"
Yeah, because it's in somebody's, you know, on somebody's mantle up there in Poughkeepsie or whatever. Just, that's wild, dude.
I couldn't wrap my head around.
Closest thing we ever experienced was this guy completely bamboozled us, totally fooled us. He walked to my whole team was in the weight room, right? This was my sophomore year. 20 all position players. It was like 16 guys. We're all
high school
working
or GW?
Out. College, yeah.
Okay.
So we're all working out. And he's like, "Hey guys, real quick, they're cleaning out the locker room. So what you got to do is open up your face of the locker. They're going to run some cleaning stuff inside. It'll take a couple seconds." And he sounded so legitimate.
Was this a guy on the team or a random?
No, this is some random dude we'd never seen before, but he spoke to us authoritatively.
This is
He's like, "Oh, this is the baseball team." He knew where the baseball locker room was. Like, this guy, totally.
Young kid, college kid?
No, a man, a grown up. Okay. So probably in his 30s, maybe about 40. And so everybody goes, "Okay, no problem." So we stop lifting, and like half, like 80% of the guys go in, like open up their lockers. Move the stools up against the lockers. That's what they told us to do, because they're going to clean the carpet, and then they're going to do some cleaning inside the locker or something, whatever he said. And all the guy did was walk in there with a trash bag and just go supermarket sweep on everybody's stuff.
You're a liar.
Hand of God.
That's true.
Yeah.
What an all-time scumbag and a genius.
Yeah. I mean, he said it with so much confidence. First, we don't know how he got in, because you had to go through security to get into the building.
What kind of stuff would have been, was this like?
Oh, wallets, dorm keys, you know, no, there are only a couple cell phones at the time, because it's right around, you know, 99, 2000. But like.
Car phones and bags.
Yeah, one of those kind of things, like giant Zach Morris, you know, cordless phone. But like. We didn't realize that we lift, and then we go to practice, and we come home at like 6:30 that night, and we're like, one guy's like, "My wallet's gone, my wallet's gone." It was like a chorus of, "Where's my wallet? Hey, where's my wallet?" Unbelievable. Wow. It took us a few weeks to figure it out.
The Stones play would have been to come back 2 days later, be like, hey, we're cleaning the locker room again.
I know.
Go in there and open up your
Hey, office. Pitchers who are lifting, we need your stuff now. Yeah. Unbelievable.
See how you guys communicate, hitters to pitchers in the different weight room groups. All right, so here's your Commanders update. First and foremost, we were talking about this with Ben Standing just 2 days ago. You and I were both hoping they were going to have some joint practices. Not going to happen.
Mm-mm.
They will not have those joint practices, which are more valuable than training camp practices, according to most of the teams. Everyone's trying to do it. A lot of teams are now having two or three joint practices with different organizations. I mentioned that by staying in Ashburn, which it seems like the Commanders are going to do rather than going to Richmond, I think it's a lot harder to have those because I just don't know logistically how you pull it off with the facilities. I don't know if that's why or not, but they are not having any joint practices. According to John Keim of ESPN, they have made that decision. And then the other item here is that they will play game one of the preseason. Their opener is against Carolina on August 13th. So they play the Panthers for their first preseason game. It's a Panthers-Commanders matchup on August 13th.
Congrats to everybody involved. 21 teams did the joint practices last year. I don't know if that was more or less than years before, you know, COVID concerns or otherwise. But
everybody wants to.
But a couple teams majored in this. The Patriots majored in this and a few others, and people kind of caught on the wisdom of it. As players play less in the preseason, especially guys that are going to be instrumental for this long haul, now 17 weeks of you know, football games, those joint practices to me are where the most improvement, the most gelling, the most good work can come. You get tired of seeing your own guys, and you know, people can give you medium decent reps where the defender knows where you're going, but he has to pretend that he doesn't. If the other team, the other person you're going up against, legit doesn't know what's coming, you get a good feel. And it's, you know, still injury risk, obviously, but it's more controlled, so it's maybe less than a regular game.
Also, congrats to Jahan Dotson. Contract is in place, signed, sealed, and delivered. And kudos to the Commanders on making sure that didn't get sideways. And he's now no longer a concern. You got that deal done. So after his 91 catches for 1,182 yards at Penn State as a senior last year in the Big Ten, he is on his way into a year one of being able to contribute. He'll be able to start, get through all the OTAs. Training camp will be on time. 12 touchdowns through the air and another touchdown on the ground last season with the Nittany Lions. Recently on NFL Network, James Palmer was talking about Jahan Dotson by way of conversations he'd been having with sources around the league who see him not as an outside wide receiver. This is what they had to say about Dotson through Palmer on NFL Network.
With Dotson, I'm curious to see, Steve, what they do with him. Because when I talk to receiver-needy teams, they kind of all told me the same thing. They love his hands, maybe the best hands in the draft, love the way he plucks it out of the air. But with his size, they see him as a slot receiver, and maybe that's it. And whether Dotson likes it or not, or the Commanders like it or not, he is going to be connected to Jameson Williams and Chris Olave on a daily basis because they were sitting there at 11 when Olave was selected when the Saints traded up, and then Jameson Williams picked at 12. His name's going to be connected to those two other receivers throughout his time, but they believe he's going to play at a variety of spots. It's going to be interesting to see how they move him around because a lot of teams I talk to see him just as an inside guy.
And that's one of the many angles this offseason you've got where the Commanders see it one way and other teams see it another. We'll see if they're right or they're wrong. And with a lot of clubs and people that follow the draft in those draft rooms, I heard the same thing where it's like, this guy's going to struggle getting off press. He's going to struggle outside based on his size, probably a slot receiver. I'm perfectly fine with that. He could be outstanding in the slot. You could be just as invaluable a weapon. Their offense went through tight ends and Jamison Crowder at one point, and they threw for almost 5,000 yards. So I'm totally cool with that. If he is in the slot, if he's a dynamic player, what about the idea that he's always going to be linked to Olave and to Jameson Williams? Is that fair?
I think so. Not his fault, by the way. All he did was work really hard, have a good college career, and get drafted. But it's inevitable. You have to do that. If you're evaluating what the Commanders did or didn't do, you passed up on a chance to take any of those guys that you just mentioned for this guy. So you're going to be graded as such, the same way you should be graded. It should be mentioned how good Chase Young is versus what Justin Herbert's doing, how good Jamin Davis is versus, you know, the fact they didn't trade up for Mac Jones last year. That's all part of the evaluation. I do think that's fair.
Our double play is next. I've got to talk about a guy who's eaten a Big Mac at least once a day for 50 straight years, which I'm really impressed by. How about you?
I've got an update on an incredible show.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Intelligent IT solutions for government. Visit govsmart.com. Danny, I'm going to need to steal your double play time today.
Take it, please.
I got something that needs to be discussed here. And that is a dude who has eaten a Big Mac every day for 50 straight years. Now, as I just told Darius, if it was up to me, if we did it my way, we would talk about this for an hour today. This is all I care about. Every now and then you stumble across something and you go, this is my passion today. So this is what I'll be talking about when I get home. I'm going to tell my wife about it. There is a guy out there who's living the life that we all wish we could. Now, I don't like Big Macs in that there's like weird sauces and weird stuff. I'm a quarter pounder man myself. I'll go quarter pounder with cheese every single time. My debate is QPC or the double QPC. I don't mess around with the Big Mac. Never had a Big Mac, won't have a Big Mac. This guy, Danny, has set the Guinness World Record of eating a Big Mac for 50 years in a row every single day. Let that sit in for a second. Saturday, Sunday, just think about all the days of your life. That guy at some point waddled to the McDonald's and got himself at least one Big Mac.
Amazing.
His current shtick is he eats two a day. That's the only thing he eats every day. Doesn't eat the fries because he doesn't want to get fat. He's in pretty good health, by the way.
That's the unbelievable part.
He's not really fat. I mean, he's not skinny. He's not a rail. He's got like a bowl cut right over top of his eyebrows. Mm-hmm. He's got a long ponytail on the back end. But he's not overly heavy, this guy. He's married with kids, which to me is an all-time stunner.
That's amazing,
for a guy
too.
That's eating a Big Mac every single day for 50 years. But without further ado, there's this video that was done by the Guinness Book of World Records last year about this guy. And I found it today, and I wanted to play it, and I just thought we could react to it as we listened to it. This is courtesy of the Twitter account of the Guinness Book of World Records. This is as of a year ago, when he was a year away from the big 50-year mark, which he hit yesterday. So congratulations, he did it. But listen to this, and we'll react as we need to.
I love hamburger like no other food. I have eaten 32,340 Big Macs in my lifetime. I'm closing in on 50 years next year of eating them every day.
Stunned that he's
been Western. This is a McDonald's Big Mac. It's the best sandwich in the world. When I like something, I stick with it all the time. My habit right now is just to eat two a day, and that would be like 14 a week. The obsession with Big Macs began because, for one thing, my love of hamburger. May 17, 1972 is the day I got my first car. I drove to McDonald's. I ordered my first three Big Macs, went out in the car and ate them. And I said right there that I'm going to probably eat these the rest of my life. And I threw the cartons in the back seat and started counting them from day one.
So pause it here.
Unbelievable.
How relatable is that, by the way? He gets his driver's license and the first thing he does is drive to McDonald's. Who didn't do that? Or was it just me as a fat guy?
No. I did that.
You turn 16, you're like, I have my own money. I have my own car.
I got $6, man.
Right.
Heaven.
So he goes and he pummels three Big Macs.
Yeah.
But think about the foresight. This was 50 years ago. This was 1972.
Years,
he gave the exact date. May 17th, 1972, I ate three Big Macs. But he immediately throws the cartons in the back. He calls them the cartons. It's like the little holder, case they come in, the little cardboard. He throws them in the back seat. So he can start counting because he already is hooked right then. He knows he'll be doing this. All right, Darius, let's fire it back up.
This is 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009,
he's pointing to these stacks
10, 11,
of cartons.
Oh, my God.
13 and so on. How I keep track of how many Big Macs I've eaten is, for one thing, I save the cartons. Another thing is I save all the receipts. And I also keep a running count on a calendar. I've kept a running count on the calendar since May 17, 1972, right up through today. So I can tell you which Big Macs I ate on which day. This is a McDonald's Big Mac. It's the best sandwich in the world. As you see here,
give me a favor,
Darius,
pause it. You skip past his description of the Big Mac because we've all seen it before. We can get to something else more interesting if you could find that. But in the meantime, Danny,
he keeps track of
what's
which...
your thought on the chronicling of it?
That's staggering.
Like in the way that you would have a CD case,
right?
Or someone has records in a room in their house.
Trophies by year.
He has the folded up cartons for every date with the receipts attached. And he even has calendars where he keeps how many he ate at any given time. He says in this video, I don't know if we'll get to it or not, so I'm just going to throw it out there. At one point in time, he used to eat 9 a day.
That's too many.
I mean, that's what, like, what are you even trying to pull?
That's
at that
too much.
Point? All right, so here's his wife. Who has been brought
so proud?
Who's been brought along for this ride somehow?
Do you accept it for Richard before?
Not tell me about his Big Mac obsession when we first met. I'm not sure it was an obsession quite then. He ate Big Macs every day. As a matter of fact, sometimes I would bring him a Big Mac, but I didn't realize it would go on forever.
I ate my first Big Mac on May 17th, 1972.
We heard that.
Started out eating pretty much 9 a day for quite a while here.
I'm not a type of person that tries new stuff, and
When I like something, like I stick with it all the time.
I know someone like that.
It's Big Mac every day. It's Coca-Cola every day. The stuff that I like is what I do every day, and it's just part of the way I am. People that say that Big Macs are unhealthy, I think it depends on the person. I think for most people, if they're unhealthy, it's because they maybe eat too much. For somebody like me, if I eat two Big Macs, and that's pretty much all I eat all day. But I like the fries, sure, but... You know, that's one of the things where I feel like I can keep from eating and not gain too much weight.
Yeah, that's over the line health-wise.
But the Big Macs, that's I got to have. So that's my main diet.
So Don comes into the restaurant quite often. Since 1972, he used to come.
McDonald's. I was going to say, yeah.
He says basically, since he's retired, though, you can skip ahead if you want to his wife or something. But since he's retired, he's found it to be not worth it to keep driving in every day because he's spending too much on gas. He's spending like more on gas than he is on the sandwiches, I guess. I don't know. The McDonald's might not be that close.
Okay, I was going to say it's not that close.
So he buys six or eight at a time. So what I don't get is, are you heating up Big Macs?
Oh.
Because think about that.
No.
He says that. He's like, he'll buy six or eight, and then we'll see it. He comes twice a week, and he loads up for 3 days. So is he reheating Big Macs?
So I get, look, the next day is not the worst thing in the world.
It's not good, though.
I'm not saying it's, listen, who are you talking to? 5 days from now?
It's not. It's never that. He said he
comes
in. Well,
what if it's 3 days? Like, I got a Big Mac on Sunday. This is my Wednesday Big Mac. I'm going to heat it up in the microwave or maybe the oven.
I need a little bit more of my guy here.
Okay, I probably will be eating Big Macs every day for the rest of my life. The only exception is that Mary once told me that when it comes to where she's got to put a Big Mac in a blender, that she says it's over for me. But, I eat Big Macs every day, and then when I do go, my boys can write down which Big Mac was the last one I ate, and then they can tell people, oh, this many Big Macs will kill you.
As far as Don's health, the doctor has said it's pretty good, actually. His blood sugar has been normal. His cholesterol has been exceptionally good.
Silly cholesterol!
I stay in pretty good shape because, for one thing, I'm kind of hyperactive. I do a lot of walking. I like to joke with people. I tell them I walk around the block usually, but they don't know that 6 miles around our block. We have my granddaughter, Serena.
So then he talks about when he first met his grandkids and he introduced them to the Big Mac. Not that he was going to let them eat it as babies, but he was going to show them, this is Grandpa's obsession. This is the Big Mac.
Unbelievable.
Has bread and secret sauce. And this guy is the best.
What a machine. What a machine.
50-year celebration yesterday, and he's up to, I don't remember the exact number. It was 32,000 when they made that video. It's closer to like 40,000 now.
Yeah, add another 400 because he's like one and a half a day on average. Unreal.
Grant, what would it take to get you to eat a Big Mac?
I mean, not much of anything, really, I guess.
You've literally never tried a Big Mac ever before.
I have not, and it's not interesting to me. I love the quarter pounder with cheese. I love the two cheeseburger meal. I love chicken nuggets.
See, Darius, what you hear is the same pathology that's got our guy going 32,000 and change on the Big Macs.
Right.
You see it right here.
Quarter pounder with cheese 49 straight days. I'm trying to get to 50. My wife, Allison, is very ashamed of me, but and my health is terrible.
So
that's my version of the video.
There's the way I've explained Grant before to people that don't quite know is Grant takes a certain route to work every day that he's used to and he likes it.
Mm-hmm.
If tomorrow a brand new road that was a quarter of the distance and no traffic and no one else knew about it, I told him about it, he would still take the old road.
Right.
Because that's the one he knows.
Makes sense.
You see what I'm saying? Like my man gets in a groove and that's where he stays.
Yeah. So like if we went to McDonald's, let's say, and you ordered a Big Mac and you're like, take a bite. It's not like trying to get me to try something gross like pie. I would perfectly reasonably take a bite of the Big Mac.
Just the backhanded swipe there. You see what he did?
However, I'm never once going to order that. Every time I go to McDonald's is a gift from God. And I don't get to do it all the time. So I'm going to get the thing that I want. I'm already going to be judged by my wife. There's already obstacles I have to overcome. So I might as well enjoy the process.
I smell an opportunity here for us to get you to try Big Mac live on air.
We tried before, and you refused. You threw a tantrum. Refused. You said, no way. You refused, Darius.
That's
refused.
Not true.
Oh. Call me a name.
I would gladly eat a Big Mac anytime you want to bring one in. I mean, I'll take a bite of it. I probably won't eat the whole thing. There's lettuce on it and all kinds of gross stuff. But
I'm sure it's gross.
Maybe we could also get quarter pounders so that after I try it, then I could eat a good burger. That would be the best thing to do. But anyway, that guy's awesome. He kicks all the butt, and keep doing you, man. I love that guy. Grant and Danny on the Fan, that was our double play. Next, the Beltway Blitz right here on G&D. 5 o'clock, we got a Commanders player joining us to go through the schedule, point out some of the trouble areas, point out some of the keys in each game with us right here on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.